Approaching on a 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. On at 15 seconds, guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
It said it was recording, so...
Yes.
Yes, it's at the top of my screen on the left.
Yes. Okay. So we're good to go. And I'll do a little introduction to anybody that might see this. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is Grant Cameron. I'm joined by Gene Kimura. Is that how you pronounce it?
Kimura.
Okay. And I'll give you the background of how this happened. I have put on my Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast, where I'll probably put this on as well. I put a whole series of people. I have about 50 people who have reported that they have been allowed to fly the flying saucer. When I first heard this in 2013, I was ready to throw the woman out of the house. I thought she was totally crazy. I had never heard such a crazy thing in my life, especially she was a 75-year-old lady. And I said, they let you fly the flying saucer? Are you kidding me? Come on. And I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that I had been in the UFO field for like 4 decades and I never heard of such a thing. And so what happened was I posted a lot of the audios of people that I've interviewed who have had this experience. And one of them, I just put a link to Chris Bledsoe, who's a pretty prominent UFO experiencer, and his version of flying the saucer. And the fact that I just put a little thing on Facebook, which said, he thought the craft was alive. It had a soul. He interacted with the craft, and he was flying the craft. And it went on to a site, Echo Whispers, which is run by
Bress Blair.
And she's in Scotland, and she's also flown the craft. I don't know if you know that. She's actually flown the craft as well.
Oh, and so she never told me that.
Yeah. So she posted it on her site. And then Gene, who we're talking to tonight, indicated that maybe she had done this. So I said, have you done this as well? And so I invited her, and Jean has been very, very hospitable and has agreed to talk to me about this, which is one of the most fascinating things. I think this may be the Rosetta Stone of all the UFO phenomena. This is what it's all about. It's about consciousness. It's not about nuts and bolts. It's not about evil aliens invading the earth and stuff like that. It's got to this weird thing that if you really want to know how consciousness fits in, there's no other way you can explain it when you hear these stories of these people who power the craft and how it's done. So welcome, Gene, and thank you for taking time to come and talk to me. I really appreciate your coming on with me.
You're welcome, Grant. I'm happy to be here.
Beautiful. And you're in Pennsylvania. I'm up in Canada. Yes. We have some pretty ugly weather here coming tonight.
It's we do too.
45 below. You guys got a lot of snow. We got snow, and we're going to get very, very cold tonight. So
wow.
But that's where we live, and it's the old idea that if it's true that we come in on reincarnation, we all chose to be here at this time, this place, in the middle of whatever mess we find ourselves in, and we probably did it for a reason. So
yes.
I assume now, I'm just going to guess, because we've never talked before. I'm just going to guess that you have had a lot of experiences, not just one experience that you
my whole life.
Exactly. You're a lifer, just like the rest of the experiences.
Right.
So let's go a little bit through your story and give me a background as to how you had contact and who you had contact with and some of the more interesting stuff that has happened in your life.
Okay. Well, the first contact was when I was younger. And I have four brothers and two sisters.
Okay.
And we would go out at night with binoculars and watch the sky because we knew that ships came in.
Okay.
So we would watch a mothership come in and let out all the these little crafts.
Wow.
There'd be quite a few of them. They'd fly north and south, and then mothership would stay there for about 2 hours, and then they would come back and they would leave.
Can I ask?
They would come every night.
Can I ask what year? What year this would have been?
Oh wow! This would have been 1965.
Okay, so it's even earlier. I had, if you knew, I wrote the book called Charlie Red Star, and that was 1975, and that was in Canada, and that's what people were describing. And I had it in a chapter called It's Strange It Should Be the Same, and all these people were describing this big object coming, the little objects flying out and flying around,
yes,
and coming
yes.
back to the big objects, and yes. the people are all telling the same story. So I'm glad you had the same sort of story. Okay, so
that's how it started.
Okay.
So then, because we'd watch them every night, you know how when you're a child, you get comfortable doing things?
Okay.
And it doesn't scare us.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all together and we'd take turns with the binoculars, but we would do it consistently all summer long on break. Yeah, that's how it began.
Okay.
And then when I first got married, my husband and I were going to visit my parents, and I saw one coming towards us, and I told him, that's a flying saucer. And he said, you are crazy. And I said, pull off the road, sit here a minute, because it's coming really quick. Yeah. So to humor me, he did.
Yeah.
Well, to horrify him, it was a flying saucer. And he's like, oh my God, you were right. And I said, let's go down to the next four corners, because if it turns in any direction, we can follow it.
Okay.
So we did that. It turned to its right, which was our left.
Yeah. Yeah.
We made the turn. And he said, oh my God, because it kept coming down.
Yeah.
He said, it's at least as long as a football field, because it was huge.
Wow.
And I said, yeah. And it had all these very tall windows
okay.
in it. It was a saucer shape,
yeah.
but it had very tall windows, maybe 30 feet tall. Yeah. I mean, it was one of the biggest ships I'd ever seen.
Wow.
I mean, to that point,
yeah.
close up, because it was coming down and it flew over our car, and our son was in the back seat and he started crying.
Wow.
And I asked him to please turn off the car. I wanted to hear it. It did not make any noise.
Wow.
None.
Wow.
It flew over this huge farmhouse and it landed in the woods behind their house.
Okay.
But they had all this property, but it was private property and there were no roads in there. And I wanted to go in there so bad. And I said, you know, it just kills you because you want to get close and see it.
Yeah.
You know, it landed, it went down. But it was behind all these very big trees. So we went to my parents' house and I told them what we had seen. And my dad told us both we were crazy.
Yeah.
We were hallucinating.
Yeah.
And we said, no, it really happened. So he poo-pooed everything we said. That was a very significant incident. Because after that, my husband started believing me because I'd been talking about seeing the UFOs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
he just never believed it until he saw it himself.
Okay.
And then I moved to California. I've seen them in California.
Okay.
I then moved to Hawaii. I had experiences with them in Hawaii. Okay. When I lived in California, two friends and I went to Sedona, Arizona, and we camped out in Boynton Canyon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know where that is.
Okay. That was when you could still camp out. That was in about 1983.
Okay.
And we had a very fun day. We went out to lunch. We went swimming in the creek. We did all this cool stuff. We got back to our campsite and we had a big tent and we had a cookout, and then we brought our drums, our American Indian drums, and we sang songs and said prayers and watched the moon. It was a full moon. So we go to bed about 11 o'clock. And when right before we fell asleep, I was sleeping on the far right. My friend Rita was in the center and our other friend Pat was to the left from the, as you looked in the front door.
Okay.
Well, she kept tapping my leg with her foot. And I'm like, what is she doing that for? It's so bizarre. But I fell asleep. So the next thing, I'm waking up, and so is Rita, and we're at a doorway. I mean, we were sound asleep.
Yeah.
And then we're at a doorway.
Yeah.
And the door opens, and guess who's there? Saint Germain.
Wow.
And I was so into Saint Germain. He was so incredible. I've read a lot of his books.
Yeah.
And I sincerely believed in him. And he invited us onto the ship. He brought out clothes and he asked us to please put these garments on. And they were like a blue one-piece outfit.
Okay.
And it was a beautiful electric blue color.
Yeah.
And as you looked at the fabric, it would like shoot like lightning out of it. It looked like lightning bolts almost running through the fabric.
Wow.
The fabric looked alive.
Wow. What does Rita think about all this?
She repeated, I'd start a sentence, she'd finish the sentence.
Okay.
That's how we remembered everything exactly.
Okay.
When we came back and they didn't take Pat. They left Pat in the tent. Pat was furious. She blamed me. And I'm like, I had nothing to do with it. We were sleeping. We don't even know how they got us up there.
Yeah.
Because we were up in the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
We weren't on the ground.
Yeah.
They teleported us. So anyway, he took us over to the control panel. And the thing I'll never forget is we always called him, yes, Commander.
Wow.
We called him Commander because somehow I think in a past life, we worked with him.
Okay.
That's what I think. And I mean, he explained so many things to us this night. It was incredible about the earth, the world, the grid system that goes around the country, all across the country,
wow.
The electric grid system.
Yeah.
And we went over to the control panel. And he told us it was up to us what we did. We could go anywhere. We could go visit different planets. We could go to the past. We could go to the future. So we voted to go to other planets and see just the planets. So we did that first. And then he asked us what we'd like to do next. And he said, would you like to drive this?
Okay.
We're like, of course. I mean, wow, that's like driving the best car you have ever been in your life. And he just showed us what to do. It was very simple. They make it very simple. And yeah, he just told us which buttons to push. And you have to think about what you want to do first.
Yeah.
Get the place that you're going to in your mind, and then you're there. I mean, you're there in like 2 seconds. It's not like you have to travel and travel and It's like almost instant, the reaction. When you tell him what you wanted to do and you hit the button, the next thing you know, you're there.
Did you have to say it out loud, or, and did both of you get to do the same thing, or where was the buttons on the, what did the panel look like?
It was very nice, like silver, but it had colored buttons on there.
Okay.
And it was, the whole place was big inside. It was large and real spacious, and it was very clean. Everything was very neat and tidy, and very, it looked very sophisticated. And this was 1983. Yeah. I mean, we weren't used to this.
And what else was inside the craft? Was there other stuff in there, other people?
There were a couple other people in there.
That looked like what?
They looked like humans.
Okay.
Nobody looked like an ET or a Gray or any of that.
Yeah.
And it was, he was so kind and so polite. And he just like treated us to this incredible experience. It was amazing. And to learn about the grid, and when we came over the United States, you could, he made the whole grid light up so we could see how it interconnected, how it ran across the country. And I mean, right now I meditate a lot with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull.
Yeah.
We work on the grid a lot because right now the grid was so important with all the earthquakes and all the floods and all the tornadoes and all this and all that. So we worked on strengthening the grid, and Bill said, we've done that now. So that's a miracle. I think that was partly why we got to see it, because when I was working on it, I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, seeing it from the air is very different than seeing one grid line or going somewhere that has a grid line under it and the vortexes, because a lot of the vortexes connect to the grid line.
And so this is like an energy grid?
Yes.
And so when you saw it, how did he light it up? What did you see?
I don't know, but it was from the, we're above and it was all lit up. So you could see how it all interconnected, the patterns. You know how they'll have maps around about the grids?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, it was even more detailed than that. It was so detailed. And I mean, it was so correct because why would he do something that's incorrect?
Did he tell you why he was showing you this stuff, or what are some of the other stuff he's talking to you about?
Oh, he told us in the future, her and I would be living in the same place then and for a bit, but then I would be moving around. She would be stationed in California. Mm-hmm. She's still in California, where I've traveled around.
Yeah.
He told us so many things. I mean, we were there for hours because when he took us back, it was getting daylight out.
Okay.
And they just took us back to the tent, opened the tent, had us go in, close the tent, when they're closing the zippers on the tent, that's when Pat woke up, and Pat started screaming at us, "Why did you leave me here all by myself all night long?"
So she noticed you were gone?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know when she noticed it, but she did. And she was so mad. She never talked to me again after that because she blamed me.
Wow.
I don't know why. I did, and I kept saying, "Pat, we did not do this on purpose. We woke up and we were there with them. We don't even know how we got there." Oh, and when I opened my eyes, the craft was still above our tent. Wow. It was right above the tent. We had this big window.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a 6-foot window in the tent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh my God, Rita, there's the ship." And we look up and we watch it. And they must have known we had seen them. And then they left slowly at first, but then more quickly. It was amazing.
Wow.
The whole experience.
Did were you told why they're here or what their mission is? Did they give you a mission?
I think my mission today is what I'm doing. I am in a lot of prayer circles.
Okay.
Praying for the planet. You send out love and light. Try to stabilize everyone because the world is crazy right now.
Yeah.
Love and light. You just hold the love and the light and hold it. Pray for people that are ill. Try to calm people down when they're really upset and frustrated or mad or whatever. A lot of people will try to start an argument with you.
Yeah.
But I just avoid it. I change the subject, tell them, "I'm sorry, we can't agree on that, but I'm not going to argue about it."
Yeah.
Because I don't know the truth about it and you don't either. Let's wait a week. In a week, somebody might come out with the truth and have proof. Because if we don't have proof about what happened, why should we argue? And then they calm down. It's really easy to get people to calm. You talk them off the ledge.
Yeah.
Good
for you. And why did they say they were here? Did they give you any indication about that?
Well, I had another friend who told me that I was going to have a fantastic time in Sedona and a huge surprise. Okay. Oh. He was a healer, and I think he was friends with Saint Germain, and I think that he really set us up to have that experience.
Wow.
That's what I think. Because he was tickled pink when I told him what happened, of course.
Yeah.
I really believe that part of the reason I'm here today is to be here now and to just do the best I can every day.
Good.
Like all of us are trying to do.
Yeah.
Good. And the more people that hold the light, stay in the love mode, try to be understanding, that's the best you can do for our country right now. Because too many crazy things are going on.
Yeah.
As you know, I quit watching TV because it's all negative. It's all lies. So many lies, so much distortion. They don't tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
When you went to the planets, what things did you see there, and how long were you there? Did you go from one planet to another planet, or just to one planet?
We just cruised around so we could see the planets. I know that sounds weird, but I don't know how they did it, because you'd talk about what you wanted to do, and then you'd be there looking at things. And then you'd be like taking it all in. It was fascinating to see the planets close up. Who could even imagine them? I mean, sometimes I'll see them on TV, but it isn't like visiting in a ship that you're allowed to drive. How ironic is that? Because most men won't even let you drive a car.
That's what made me think about, you know, this first woman that, you know, in Saudi Arabia, you can't drive a car without your husband or a man in the car. And here they'll let you fly the flying saucer with no insurance, nothing. Just go ahead. And that's why I say it's an important story, because if you're going to make up a story about being on a craft, that's the last thing you're going to say, that you're flying the craft. That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you make that up? It's like total insanity. Right. And so you were looking through a window. Is that how it worked? Was the window open?
Remember, they had windows. Yeah. Okay. All the way across the front. Yes. And
you think this is the same one you saw earlier with your husband?
No.
Was it one big giant window, or is it a series of windows that you're looking at?
It was a series of windows in the front. Yeah. No, the one I saw with my husband was different than this one.
Okay.
And it was huge. It was probably a mothership because it was enormous.
Yeah.
He was very good with spatial relationships, and he's the one that said that is bigger than a football field.
Wow.
How many feet is a football field?
Yeah, in the States would be 100 meters, so 100 yards, so maybe 130. It's pretty big. 100 yards would be the 110 yards, 120 yards.
Wow.
So that's
it was not huge, he said.
Yeah.
And it flew over this house, a farmhouse.
Yeah.
It was way bigger than the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I mean, there have been so many other experiences. I mean, I don't know why, but sometimes when you're connected to them, and I think a lot of us have come from other planets.
Yeah.
And then now have come through as humans to be here at this time, because it's an important time in history. This is probably one of the most important times ever.
I agree with you.
And there's so much riding on what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to keep it straight and headed in the right direction.
Did you have experiences after that? Did you come, like sometimes people talk about becoming more intuitive or psychic, or having, one of the things I study is like at port type experiences where things are moving around the house, or like poltergeist type stuff, or?
I always have things moving around the house. I'll set it down on the table. I'll come back a few minutes later, it's not there. I know I just put it there. And then I'll hunt everywhere and then go back and it's right there on the table. I mean, that happens all the time. So many situations. I have spirits that visit me here in this apartment.
Tell me about that. And,
well, I can see them in this camera. When I'm on Zoom,
okay,
sometimes they'll be walking right behind me and I can see them.
Wow.
I'm here alone. I mean, I have a cat, but it's me and my cat.
Yeah. And who do you think they are? Is it connected to the house or connected to you?
Well, I know one time it was my dad and my grandmother, and they're both deceased.
Yeah.
But I could see them, just their spirit behind me. They were standing behind me. And other times I'll notice something. And when somebody's on your side of the camera, they'll say, oh, there's somebody standing right behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's bizarre. Plus, I've had orbs flying around in here.
Oh, okay. So explain that, because you know that Tress is big into orbs as well, and so am I. So to describe some of your orbs, do you do the photographing thing like some of the people do, where you...
I tried, but my camera broke. I haven't replaced it yet.
Yeah.
But lucky, I can see them.
Okay.
I'm one of the few people, Tress and I can both see them with our eyes.
Okay.
You know, that's unusual, right?
Yeah.
We have an extra connection somewhere. It lets us see it. No, I read an article about it. There's cones in your eyes, and there's connections that you have that most people do not.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Julie Ryder?
Doesn't ring a bell, no.
She does the Montana megaliths.
No, I don't know her, no.
Well, she can explain the cone thing with the eyes, because she wrote an article about it.
So what do you think the orbs are? Or give me a couple stories about...
The orbs, I think, are spirits that come to visit.
Okay.
They'll come, they travel in the orb.
Okay.
That's what I think. I've been seeing them for maybe 3 years here. Okay. And they'll come in different colors at different times.
Give me the colors you've seen.
I've had yellow, green, pink, pink and white, blue, lavender.
And how big would these orbs be?
Some are like this big.
Okay.
Some are smaller.
Okay.
And some... I'd say the biggest one was like that.
Okay.
And some are unusual shapes. I got a few recently that were really bizarre, and they were pea green. But Tress said that's normal too, and they had jaggedy edges.
Okay.
Those were the first times I'd seen any like those. So they're changing. Sometimes they're circular, other times they're shaped like this. They're very bizarre. I have a journal, and I'll write down the dates I saw them, the times I saw them, the colors, draw pictures of them. I try to keep that, and I've learned to put them on my calendar, because sometimes they'll come every day for months. And then they'll quit for a while, and then they'll start back up. So I don't know what's going on with them.
And what, do they just fly a little bit through the house, or do they move around? Do they stay there, or what do they?
Well, sometimes they fly through one wall, come in, zoom right through and go out the other wall.
Yeah.
Some come in and just, they're above my bed, like watching me.
Okay.
They'll just be sitting there. And I'll try to communicate with them mentally, say, hello, you're welcome here.
Yeah.
You want to be here, come in. I love orbs. No problem. Come whenever you want. Can you tell me your name? But I'm sending the message mentally, not saying it out loud.
Yeah.
And so far, I haven't heard a response. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they'll get closer and just sit there.
Wow. And have you seen it? Go ahead. Sorry.
Other times they'll fly away.
Have you seen any faces? Sometimes people report seeing faces in the orbs.
Not really.
Yeah.
No. But the colors, beautiful colors.
Wow.
And the one looked like a, you know what the yin and yang's
symbol? Yes. Okay. Yeah.
The one I saw was pink and white.
Wow.
But it was the yin and yang symbol, pink and white. That was on New Year's Eve. I was on the sofa.
Wow.
And it was at the end of the sofa. And I'm like, wow, that's unusual.
Wow.
But it was just hanging out.
Interesting. Have you had any more contacts with Saint Germain or any other beings? Because sometimes there'll be contacts and you'll get messages and direction. Have you had anything since 83?
I did years of meditating with two of my friends.
Yeah.
I did a painting of Saint Germain. Do you want to see it?
Yes. Yeah.
And when I meditate with this painting, this painting makes me go off into La La Land.
So you did the painting?
Yes.
Wow, I'd love to see that.
Okay. One moment.
Okay.
Anyway, I did this painting in the background. I did it with airbrush.
Okay.
So it's very abstract. Yeah. But if you really look at it, it's like another dimension.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. One moment.
Wow. So that's the way he appeared on the ship. Is that what he was wearing on the ship?
He was wearing a blue, but it was darker than this.
Okay.
But.
Ian, beautiful. So you're an artist by the looks of it.
Yes. But see this background. When you meditate this background, it's very hypnotic.
Yeah, it is. I can see it just from looking at it.
Yeah.
What does the symbol of key mean?
That he has the key. He has the answer.
Okay.
To me, have you ever read any of his books?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, you have to. His books are mystical. And he normally, I didn't know this when I met him, but he brings clothes to people and the clothes recharge your body and help your body get rid of things that you don't need in there.
Wow.
Like things you might have eaten that are going to give you a problem in the future.
Yeah.
Clothes that he has people wear recharges their body.
Wow.
And makes it healthier. Plus, he makes this drink to let them drink it, and it revitalizes them. He has helped so many people. He's very kind.
Wow. Sounds like you're following in his footsteps. You're trying to live a life like that.
Well, I'm trying, but we're all trying so hard. And then it gets so frustrating because things... You cannot control anything except yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the best thing is to work on you and forget what's going on out there. But if you get in groups of people that are like-minded and there's more of you, and I think people are starting to wake up, Grant. I really do.
Yeah.
Our meditation group, we'd started out, there'd be like 12 to 15 people.
Okay.
Okay. It got as many as 30. You know how many we had the other day? Monday? The 17th? 50.
Wow.
That's a huge jump.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, all these people want to come and meditate. That is beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah. It was awesome.
That's encouraging.
Yes. And I'm in multiple meditation groups. So it's interesting because more and more people are meditating. More and more people are trying to stay grounded and realize that if they stay calm and they don't lose it, that helps other people not lose it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. You do the best you can.
Wow. Is there a link that we can put down for, is this an open group that people can check out or they want to come? Yeah. If you send me the link on Facebook, I'll put it in the show notes.
I'll send you the link.
Yeah.
And I'm in Tress's group also, Echo Whispers.
And does she have a meditation group or what is she doing in her group?
I'll send the link to her also. Yeah. She would like people to join if they're interested.
That's the Echo Whispers group?
Yes. All of these are free groups.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in a couple other groups, but you have to pay to get into them.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I can put that those links too if yeah. people are interested. One of the groups is in California. Two of them are in California. But with Zoom, it doesn't matter where we are.
Yeah, yeah, Tress is very much into animals. You have a cat. Do you have a? Do you think yes. this connects to what's going on here, or how we're supposed to treat animals, or something? You know.
I think being kind to animals is good for everyone. Animals can teach people how to love.
Exactly.
Animals are so loving.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're your best friend. They never complain. They yeah. always are happy to see you. We could learn a lot from animals.
Good
and being
point.
Kind to animals is a very good idea. Good and point. It isn't just because it's a nice thing. It's because being kind, when you're kind to an animal, you're also kind to people. You can tell a lot about a person if they abuse an animal. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In terms of, we're talking, you had a couple of different experiences with what appears to be different types of crafts. What's your interpretation? You hear all this stuff about almost like negative news, like there's the evil aliens and they're, you know, here to do whatever. What's your take on why the UFOs are here? Why they've been here since 1947. What do you think is actually going on?
I think they're trying to help us not destroy the world yeah. and Mother Earth. They're here to stop any nuclear kind of situation.
Yeah.
They do not want that to happen because it will impact everyone and the other planets, not just us. They're here to help us. Our government always lies and tries to scare us so that we'll believe everything they tell us, but we know this year sort of did it in for them. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's everybody sort of, you know, if you got a job and you're invested in it and you're, I always call it the national insecurity budget. It's sort of like you got $800 billion defense budget. And you're more insecure every time you raise the budget. It's sort of like, you know, why do you need this kind of stuff? And it comes out of fear. It comes out of, you know, if you have bigger weapons and more guns, then you'll be safer and you're not safer at all.
No, you're not. And yeah. it's all greed based.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. And if they would think about it and quit trying to destroy everything and try to start healing things. And I mean, there are a lot of new discoveries on the horizon that will really help the world. And that's all we can hope yeah. for.
That's where you're like the balancing force, where you're trying to raise the consciousness of the world and get it to go the other way and to flip. And so I think it's connected to what the UFO intelligence is here to do, because everybody sort of overlooks the fact that they're here for a reason. They're, yes. you know, because when you see them flying around, they're really not doing anything. They're making contact with people and they don't seem to eat. They don't seem to, they don't have any designer furniture. Maybe you can explain, you didn't see any designer furniture or chandeliers or fancy clothes or
no,
anything like that.
No.
They're just basically, it appears that they're just here on a mission to try to maybe stop us from not so much destroying ourselves, but destroying the planet so anybody yes. can live on it. Because if you contaminate the planet with radioactive isotopes and stuff, then nobody can live here. And
right.
so, yeah, I appreciate what you're doing and I appreciate your telling me the story. Is there anything else that we should talk about that I may have left out that you think is important in this UFO story? Because you've been at it probably longer than I have. I had a sighting in 75, so you've been in it 10 years longer than I have. Is there anything that we should, you think is important that we should point out to people?
When I was married to my husband,
yeah.
after I had our first child,
yeah.
I became pregnant multiple times and wow. they took my babies.
Wow.
And I knew it because I could always tell when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And I begged them to let, you know, even if I cannot have these children back, I want to meet them. I begged them for a long time. And finally, they let me meet them. There were 8 of them.
Wow. Tell me about that. That's interesting.
Different ages, different ages. They took me up on a ship.
Okay.
And they brought the children out. They had them behind a partition because they said, you cannot touch them. We don't want you to grab them and try to take them. And they thought I was going to freak out. Well, I know that the way they communicate is telepathic. So I just telepathically talked to all the kids, told them I love them. I was sorry. I had nothing to do with this. They took you when you were so little that I couldn't prove I was even pregnant. Yeah. They knew I was pregnant before I knew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're so advanced, but they had them at every age. It was incredible. How many?
Did the kids interact with you? Could you telepathically, did they respond to you or exchange love with you?
We made eye contact. I connected with their eyes.
Yeah.
I just kept talking as much as I could to them. I know a lot of them understood what I said.
Yeah.
And a lot of them felt better because I had at least talked to them.
Beautiful.
But I was not allowed to touch them. And that always bothered me because I thought that was very cruel.
Yeah. Well, there is, I guess, the thing where, I mean, if they're on a different frequency or whatever, because you didn't have the bonding experience where sometimes when there's a baby, you get to hold the baby. They want you to bond with the baby.
And they didn't have a bonding experience there either.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's unusual.
They didn't
did they look
tell
like
me,
humans?
Yes. They look just like my son.
Wow. So they could walk down the street and people would not know who they were.
I would know they were mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know what my son looks like. That was the most bizarre thing. And they all looked like each other. They were very similar. Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Four boys, 4 girls. Could you remember what the number was?
It was all boys.
All boys. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unusual.
Yeah, I know. All boys.
Wow. Well, have you ever told your son or about this? Have you got support from your family about what's going on?
They don't. They think I'm out of my mind.
That's the pattern.
People see UFOs. How many people talk about Bigfoot? I mean, I've seen Bigfoot. They think I'm crazy because I saw Bigfoot. I mean, come on.
Wow. When did you see a Bigfoot?
About 1983 also. Wow. When I lived in California, and it was, have you ever heard of Joliet, California?
No.
It's about 45 minutes outside of San Diego. It's up in the mountains.
Okay.
And they have a big pie festival every year.
Okay.
The guy was dating, him and I went there, driving around Joliet, and we decided to go up in the mountains. And we come around this bend and there's all these cows on the left, but they're all like running towards the center of a big circle and their butts are all pointed at us.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like ramming into each other. They're all trying to get in the middle. And he goes, my God, what's going on? I said, something is really wrong. Because my aunt and uncle had a farm and they had cows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Grant, this most horrific sound, it sounded like a cross between a bear and a lion.
Okay.
And when it screamed so loud, it shook your ribs.
Wow.
Your ribs went like, your insides all went like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
And my boyfriend said, "Oh my God, what was that?" And I said, "I think it was Bigfoot." And he said, "Come on." I said, "Why do you think the cows are afraid? They can smell him. Because the smell is in the air, probably." Anyway, right before it yelled, these people had driven up that road on a motorcycle. Two people on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it screamed, they screamed, and they went running through the woods. You could hear them running through the woods. So about an hour and a half later, we drove up there to see if their motorcycle was still there. Their motorcycle was there for six more weeks.
Wow.
They never came back for 6 weeks to get the motorcycle.
Wow.
And then about 6 weeks later, this gentleman came to our church to give a lecture about Area 51 and the UFOs. Okay. And he had pictures of the aliens that had died in the crash.
Okay.
I told him about what happened with us in Bigfoot. And he said, "Can we go there next week? Cool. Let's have an outing." So he had a big seminar. He invited everybody from the church, 75 of us,
went
to Julian. And they had this Air Force field that they had shut down because of all the UFOs and all the Bigfoot and all that. They closed it because UFOs fly over there all the time. So we're out on this field, and now it's a big lookout point. And we're up there. There's 75 of us. And three of us are in the middle doing the welcoming prayer. And all of a sudden, Bigfoot's on our left. And I said, "Oh my God, hostie, what is that?" He goes, "That's Bigfoot." Wow. Because he was familiar with Bigfoot. He wasn't really afraid of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh my gosh." Well, I don't know if you know this, but Bigfoot can appear and disappear at will.
Yeah.
They can teleport. So it would go from left to right to left to right. It would appear and disappear instantly. And then it walked right through us, right through our group. And it stunk to high heaven. And I almost fainted because the smell was horrible.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Have you ever been close enough to smell them?
No. But I've heard the stories.
Oh, my goodness.
So what do 75 church people think while this is going on?
Well, when he told them, this is what he said. "Do not be afraid. Bigfoot has joined our circle. He's outside of our circle. Do not run. Do not scream. Just be calm. Take a deep breath. He's not going to do anything. He's just trying to see what we're doing." And we were calling in UFOs. You know, we were doing all kinds of stuff. And it didn't do any more than that. But on the first break, everybody, half of the group left.
Okay.
Because they were afraid that it might do something. It never did anything. It was just there, like he said, to see what we were doing, because it probably heard us all talking and laughing and stuff like that. And it wasn't used to a lot of people being near it.
Wow.
Yeah. And that, that was in California.
Wow. You're almost like a magnet. You find that with experiences that they have all these different types of experiences,
Look at what I've told you in a short time. I've had more experiences than these, but these are some of my experiences. And then when you honestly talk to people and tell them what you experienced, they say, oh, you're nuts.
Yeah. But unless but you have to look at it, Gene, like this, that if you hadn't had the experiences, would you be as open? You probably say, oh, you're nuts too, because it's not until you see it. Then it's like wake up time. It's like, there's no doubt. Now, you know, this is real. But if you hear somebody talking about weird stuff, you go like, I don't know, you know, like.
Well, when somebody tells me things, I listen.
Yeah.
I don't always believe them initially. But if you hear this story 10,000 times, are you going to believe it?
Yeah,
I mean, hello.
That's why I think we have to tell the stories. The more people that tell the stories, the more it may not be the old people, you know, that are going to believe it, but the young people are going to be listening, and it's not offensive to them. They're not scared about it. And so when we're gone, they'll just say, oh yeah, we knew all this was going on all the time. And that's when the consciousness shifts. It's not like you've got to convert people. You just got to put the message out, and the people who need to hear it will hear it. And it's usually the young people who will adopt it because it's not a threat to them.
Right. You know, the American Indians, a lot of them know about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
They've known about Bigfoot many years more than we have. And they made friends with them.
Yeah.
They give them food. They give them tobacco. They try to help them have a better life. I mean, they have the right idea.
Yeah.
And have you heard of How to Hunt? The show How to Hunt.
No.
Well, he's been promoting a lot of stories about Bigfoot because he is tired of all the lies. He has seen them a couple times himself.
Yeah.
He knows they exist. And I love his show. So I might put that in my thing too.
Yeah. I've done a few interviews with people who research Bigfoot, and I've had some sightings that people told me. One was a dean of education at the University of Manitoba. The one guy told me, and so why would he make up the story about this thing coming and walking in front of the road? And I was into UFOs. I really wasn't into Sasquatch, but he just said, oh, have you ever heard about Sasquatch? Oh, I saw one. And he wanted to tell me the story. He wanted to get it off his chest. But this is a guy who had a big reputation, the dean of education at a university.
Wow.
So that's what we have to do. Gene, you and I, we put out the stories, and the people who need to hear it will hear it. And we stop trying to convince people who don't want to listen, because they're not going to listen anyway. I mean, they're living in one universe and you're living in another universe. And it's almost like the flat earth, like the sun going around the earth. It's going to take time for people to come to grips with what's going on, because nobody wants to be wrong. Because what I've established is that people who have their ideas, it's part of their ego. It's part of who they are, their beliefs. And so when you challenge their beliefs, you're challenging them. And people don't want to be wrong. They don't want to look stupid or whatever. So they'll defend their ego. And that's where I think you're totally right. You stay in love. You do meditation. You just put your stuff out there. And whatever happens, happens, that there's people helping us, guiding us, and that eventually everybody's going to come to a conclusion. People aren't stupid. That as we go along another 30 or 40 years, everybody's just going to realize, oh, these people are right all along, and the thing is going to shift. But it won't shift unless you and I do what we've got to do. Because if I don't know if you believe in reincarnation, but to me, it's still a thing that you come in for some reason. Like, why are we here? And you probably came on a mission. And the thing is to figure out, why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? And am I doing it? Nothing else matters.
Right.
Because only you, when you go across, only you face the judgment of your life review of how you made out. There's nobody going to be with you. You're not going to see anybody else's life review. It's all about what you did, and what everybody else does is not really relevant. It's not going to change anything.
Right.
I think you're doing right with what you're doing, especially the meditation, which is part of the consciousness thing, which is why I'm so interested in this, you know, flying the ship where the mind. Did you believe that did you sense that the craft was alive, or that you interacted with the craft, or was it?
It felt like you did, because it was so instant. It was, I still don't understand how we could instantly be somewhere.
Yeah.
That was the most amazing part. It was very instant. Everything was instant and so easy. It wasn't hard. Everything was very graceful and easy. I would recommend highly reading Saint Germain's books, because his philosophy is very good and he helps so many people. And it was amazing. I love his books.
Wow.
How I got interested in meditating about him. Yeah. And then my friends and I, we would get together all the time and do these meditations, and they were phenomenal. And I was talking to them earlier because they had different church groups for many years they were involved in. Every night of the week, he said they would go five nights a week to different groups and meditate. Some were about UFOs, some were about, you know, just spiritual experiences. But yeah, it's pretty cool when you meet a lot of people and they're trying to help everyone and the world. And our world needs help. Especially now.
Yeah. And the point would be that you and I are here at this time, perhaps because we're supposed to do something about it. We came in because we can, you know, sort of say it's a bad place and everything's going wrong, but we chose to be here. We could have come before it all happened. We came at the middle of the mess. Maybe we've got a job to do in the middle of this mess. Maybe we're here.
We have a job to do, but it's a really great time to be here. Yeah. I mean, we're needed now.
Yeah.
We have, our mission is to help. And if we're helping, then we're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, there's actually an expression. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes, I like that. I believe that.
Wow. Well, say hi to Tress and ask her about flying the ship. She'll tell you about it and you'll read it.
That'll be exciting.
I'll put yours in. Maybe we'll put in St. Germain's picture, your painting. You're a very good painter.
Oh, and thank you.
We'll stick that in there, and it'll maybe waken up some other people to realize that this is for real, and there's this important message that you should listen to. Because that's the thing, I believe sometimes the UFO stuff, they do weird stuff where they show you this weird stuff and you tell the weird story, but it just sort of opens people up to being open. That you know, that we are, it's the story that gets you to talk to people. And then you add the part about the meditation and stuff. So they hear the weird story and they're interested. And then you bring the meditation thing, which they wouldn't have wanted to hear to start, but you get to, that's what I think they're doing. They're doing this weird stuff. Cause if it wasn't weird, like the port stuff or the moving stuff around the house or the orbs, if it wasn't weird, you wouldn't pay any attention. You wouldn't, it's the weird. That's what makes you tell a story. And everybody's exchanging stories, and everybody realizes something's going on here. Something's not right. Yeah. Something's happening, and we got to figure out what it is.
Rust and I have the missing stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It happens to her all the time. A lot of people in the Echo Whispers group, we all have missing things.
Wow.
We all have visitors that hide our stuff.
Have you had drop in? Like, have you had stuff like coins and stuff that suddenly appeared? Stuff that wasn't in your house before?
No, but a few feathers.
Oh. You have to read my...
walk through. I mean, there's... I don't have a bird. How could a feather all of a sudden be here?
Oh, cool. Tell me a little bit about that. I'll send you a copy of the book. We have a whole chapter on feathers. So tell me...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was... had vacuumed the floor and stuff. And I walked it back in the room and there was a feather on the floor. And I'm like, what? I mean, how is that even possible? I mean, where'd it come from?
Yeah. Just a small white feather, or what kind of feather was it?
It was a white feather, but I didn't have a white pillow. Yeah. I didn't have anything with a white feather.
Yeah.
I mean, how could a feather all of a sudden be there after I just vacuumed?
You had the one experience, or did you have more than one feather experience?
I've had other feather experiences, but normally they're outdoors.
Okay.
this was indoors. That's what really threw me. It was indoors. I mean, where'd it come from?
Yeah, that's the people have an impression. I can't remember what the term is for it, but there's actually, if you look it up, there's actually some people have a belief as to what there's a symbol. It's a symbol for something. But
you know what it is?
A symbol. I can't remember off the top of my head. The one that we had happened in Nevada. That would be about 4 years ago, and there was about 12 feathers and 15 people. And it was just one incident after another. And my assistant, the last one was, I thought it was all over. We had left a conference, it was a UFO conference, and we were there, and we were in a shop where she was. It was a 300-year-old church, and had a gift shop. And she went to a gift shop, and you know, men aren't interested in shopping or whatever. So
right,
I figured, I'll go wander around the shop and wait for her to do whatever she's going to do. And there was these two cards with feathers on them. One was an Aboriginal, what do they call them, with the feathers, where it's like a net thing. And the other one was this woman holding these white feathers. And so I took photographs of these two big, huge cards. And I figured, I don't want to pay for them. So I took photographs. So that's kind of weird. There's feathers, more feathers. And then I put the card down. She's standing there holding the feather. And I said, get out of here. And she said, I was standing outside the gift shop waiting for you, and this feather fell down and landed on my right foot. So the feather thing is kind of, you'll be interested. It goes on for a couple months. There's one story and another story, and it's all this thing with feathers. So I'm glad you had that one. And dimes is the other big one that people have, where people find dimes and they believe it's from their mother or their dead father, usually a dead mother or something, that are leaving these dimes. They find these dimes in the middle of the floor, just like you, or in the middle of a bathtub, where there's no way it's going to be in the bathtub. Like, why would we have a dime in the middle of the bathtub? And that's what they'll do. They'll put it in a very obvious place that makes you go, wow. And that's, I call it the theory of wow. They make you go, wow, how did that thing get there? And it stops you, because until you have the experience, like whether it's your husband or your son or whatever, once your husband had an experience, then he goes, oh, this is for real. Until then, you can talk all you want, and you're just talking to the wall.
Right. He knew it was real. It flew right over our car.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in shock. And he kept trying to tell my dad, we are not lying. We are not making this up.
Yeah. Yep. It's important. Do you feel honored to have gotten these experiences? Because a lot of people are in the, you know, they go through their life and they live lives of quiet desperation. They watch TV, work, and put their kids through school or whatever, but they don't have any of these very sort of bizarre experiences that make you realize the world is much more magnificent than you think it is.
In a way, I feel lucky, because so many, I mean, it's really like luck. I'm lucky.
Yeah.
And I'm mature enough to just accept it.
Yeah.
And then I kept having other experiences, you know.
Yeah.
First it's UFOs, then it's Bigfoot. Now, you don't know what I went through over Bigfoot, because my brother-in-law, my sisters, my whole family, I mean, that was in 83. They still make fun of me over Bigfoot.
Yeah.
They don't make the experience. Fun of me over UFOs, because they saw the UFOs.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times you need the experience. That's why I always say to people, why do UFOs have lights on? They have lights so you can see them. They want you to see them. That's what it's about. It's about, you know, getting people to realize, because until you see it, until you have the experience, it's very hard to believe. Like a lot of things that people would have as experiences that I haven't had, I will sort of believe them. But then in the back of my mind, I'm going, well, you know, I don't know 100% for sure. But when I saw the ones I saw, I don't care what you say. You can go jump off a bridge. I couldn't care less. I know what I saw. I'm not stupid. You know, I was, you know.
What kind did you see?
Well, I saw, and I had no interest in UFOs. So what happened with me was, there was a small town outside of, I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is a big city. And there was a small town that was having these UFOs. And I said to my friend, oh, we should go out there and see what they're looking at. I had no interest in it or whatever, but I thought, well, we should go see what everybody, because it was in the newspaper all the time. This thing was there all the time.
Right.
And then we didn't go for 3 months. And then the local TV station actually caught this thing jumping off the ground. They filmed this thing jumping off the ground. And then I said to my friend, I said, come on, let's go. And we went out, and I always make the joke. I said, it was like you buy the lottery ticket. You know there's a chance you're going to win, but you're not going to win anything. You're not going to see anything. Though everybody else is going to see it, you're not going to see anything when you go out there. And we went out there. We drove around for an hour, and there was nothing. And then my friend said, we'll drive back into Carmen, which is the town that we were at. We'll drive in one more time. If we don't see anything, let's go home. I said, great. It's been a total waste of time. Let's turn around. Let's go home. So we drive to go back into the town. As soon as we turn around, this thing comes from the left to the right. It was glowing. It was like a plasma red object. It was pulsing like it was alive. And it flew right in front of the car. And that was it. I mean, I was like, I quit university. That's all I wanted to do. And the second night it came right at me, we were together, my same guy that was driving and a couple other people we brought along, came right at me and then made this turn and flew off in the northeast. And that's when I say to people, why would it fly at me and then make the turn and go into the northeast? Why didn't it just fly from the west into the northeast? Why did it have to come at me and then turn? Because it wanted me to get involved. It was dragging me down the rabbit hole. And that's what they do. They get you to tell stories, me to tell stories, and they're dragging people into it by these weird things. I didn't know what it was, but I said, I'm going to figure out what this is. I don't know what the heck I saw, but it was as real as real. And I've spent since 1975 almost full time working on this, just trying to figure out what's really going on. And that's why I think you and people like you are the most important people. I said, you can look at all the lights in the sky you want, Gene. I don't really care. All that's going to tell you is something's going on. It's not until you talk to people like Gene, who have been inside the craft and who have interacted with the intelligence, when you're going to start to learn what's going on. Until then, you're just looking at lights in the sky. Who cares? It doesn't mean anything. You got to talk to people who are interacting with the intelligence, because the intelligence is talking to people. But unfortunately, people like you are ignored. People write them off as they're crazy, it's anecdotal, you can't prove it, this sort of stuff, and they keep going back to UFO sightings, and we can gather another 2 million UFO sightings or 3 million UFO sightings, and it's just going to continue to confirm, yeah, there's something going on, but we still don't know what's going on. You can't tell what it is by looking at some light flying around the sky. It just doesn't get you anywhere. So I'm always fighting for experiences like you and others who have had the experiences to say, you need to listen to these people. If you don't, you're wasting your time. You're never going to figure it out.
Right. I had another UFO experience.
Yeah.
One night I went to visit a friend in Meadville, and from where I lived, it was maybe a 20-minute drive.
Okay.
But when I was leaving, I called my mom and I said, I'm on my way. Don't worry, I'll be there in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So when I'm driving, I see an orange glowing cigar-shaped UFO. It's the first cigar-shaped one I saw.
Okay.
And it was right over the treetops going down 79, and it was on my right.
Yeah.
I pulled over on the left. There was a pull-off area just to watch it, so I wouldn't disturb any other cars.
Yeah.
And when I started to pull over, I parked. And then the next thing I know, I was driving home. And when I walked in the house, she said, where have you been? I said, what do you mean? She goes, you are 3 hours late.
Wow.
And I said, what? She said, you're 3 hours late.
Wow.
I didn't know. I had missing time and I didn't know.
Wow.
She told me.
Interesting. Have you ever had dreams? Like in terms of sometimes missing time, they'll sort of, you'll get stuff in dreams where you sort of reenact. Have you had that out of body experience and stuff like that?
I've had out of body experiences, but that was when I was younger.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I had multiple of those. And then I had a lot of dreams where I was going to other countries and helping people. When I'm asleep, I'm helping people in another country.
Wow.
I know that sounds weird, but a lot of my dreams were like that in my 20s, 30s. Those are the kind of dreams I would have.
Wow.
I went to Singapore with my ex-husband.
Wow.
And he had gone to Jakarta.
Okay.
On an assignment. He worked for the military. And in Singapore, a lot of people kept coming up to me and saying, oh, you're that nice woman that helped us. And I'm like, excuse me?
Wow.
And they're like, oh, yeah, you helped us in Jakarta.
Wow.
And I'm like, it wasn't me. And they, oh, yes, it was. And she even brought her husband over and said, remember her? And he said, yes. Wow. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but it really, it was. And they thought I wouldn't admit it was me.
Wow.
How do you explain that? I'm in Singapore, and they're telling me they saw me the week before in Jakarta.
Yeah, the world is a more magnificent place than people give it credit. Are you journaling all this for your to leave behind when you leave? Because this is going to be like living at the time of Jesus or the signing of the Constitution, or you live at a very important time. Are you journaling all this stuff?
I'm journaling some of it, not all of it, but I'm, you know, thinking about journaling more because there's so many intricate parts and it all blends together.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your sharing what you have with me, and perhaps we can do it again. If you come up with other stuff, we can have another conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I think, as I said, you are the people that we need to be talking to. And I think you've added a little bit more to a very important story of being on the ship and this idea of you can instantly move from one place to the universe to the other. If that is true, it ain't the world people think it is. It is something else. And that's what people need to know.
Well, that's why it was so amazing.
Yeah.
It was instant. Everything we did, it happened so easily. How is that possible?
Yeah.
And it was like teleportation.
Yeah. And that's where people will, that's what was going to change, is people are going to realize this is a real principle, and that it's happening for a reason, and that we can do this kind of stuff, or the world is maybe made out of consciousness. It's more consciousness, and that these people have answers that we can use. And the fact that they may be here to actually try to stop us from destroying ourselves, and that they're here to help,
right.
And that we,
right.
That you are helping them do their mission. And I'm willing to help put your story out. Cause when you get to, like, I've got 50 people. So you got to remember, your story has not been told by 50 different people. And I had not heard that story since till 2013. I had never heard anybody tell this story. And I talked to a lot of UFO people. And so it may be that they want this story out about flying the craft. So I appreciate the fact you're in this sort of very limited group, but it's 50 right. people all telling exactly the same story. That is not possible by people making stuff up. Everybody's telling the same story.
And why would we lie about it?
Exactly. Yeah. Or make something so crazy. I mean, you say, well, you know, I had dinner on the ship, or I they took my baby, or what. You can say that stuff and people will believe that, but I flew the ship. It's like, well, no, okay, now you're crazy. Then people are telling this stuff that just doesn't, that there's a couple of things that happen in the UFO field where, I can't remember what the other one was, but there's another one like that where there's no way somebody could ever think of something like this. Or the one was when, I don't know if you had this experience, but the other one was if you have people who have the 40% of all experiences say at one point during their UFO experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe. And 31% of people who have near-death experiences will say the same thing. During my experience, I knew the answer to everything in the universe. And I would actually talk to these people and say, okay, so how do you know there wasn't something number 567 on the far side of the universe they forgot to tell you about? And they would say, I'm not sure. I just know I knew everything in the universe. And when I came back, that's not something you're going to make up. I knew everything in the universe. That's not something you're going to make, you know, if you're going to make up the story that people are going to believe, you don't put that in the story. But you get that. And the one with the ship is very important as well, because there's no way. Why would, given the first woman told me, I said, I'm thinking to myself, are you crazy? Like, do you think I'm going to believe this? And then when I heard the second one, and the third one, and the fourth one, it's like, wow.
I mean, didn't they let men fly the ships?
Mostly women. I've had a retired U.S. Air Force colonel tell me the story. I've had a United 747 United Airlines pilot tell me the story. It's always the same story. But some people will say, I think it was a dream. I think it was a dream. And I say, everything's just a dream. And it's sort of like they maybe because it's so weird that they can't believe that it's actually happened. So they say it's a dream. I say, okay, it's a dream. Just tell me what happened. And it's just like what you did. You know, this idea that you touch something, panel, or you push a button, or you do whatever, and it instantly happens. And whatever you think is what happens. And that every time the same story.
He said it was important to see it in your mind and then push the button.
Okay, so give me that again, just so we get that. So the instructions he gives you, you're standing there with Rita, and then so what are the instructions? How does it come about? Where
Saint Germain says, see it in your mind first.
Okay.
Then push the button.
Wow.
And then boom, the next thing we're there.
Wow.
It was so easy. Everything was easy.
And what did Rita, what was her reaction to all this about flying the craft?
She was amazed. We were both amazed. And when we got back, and Pat was so angry and she kept yelling.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, Pat, can you listen to our story? And then you'll understand. We had nothing to do with what happened.
Yeah.
We'll tell you what happened to us.
Yeah.
And we told her, and I would start this sentence and Rita would finish the sentence. She would start the next sentence and I would finish the sentence. We agreed on everything and we remembered everything exactly the same, down to the clothes, flying the ship, being able to get there instantly. It was so amazing, but we were gone for hours. And that's what really made Pat mad. She's alone in Boynton Canyon all night.
Wow. Well, thanks, Gene, for talking to me, and we'll stay in touch on Facebook. Send me those links and we'll put it in the it'll be on my podcast. I have a called Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I put the audio on there, and then on my YouTube I'll put the video. And make sure you talk to Tress and tell her you heard that she's flown the story.
All her info. And then I'll send you all the other links.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jean. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Grant.
Beautiful. Thanks for reaching out. And hopefully what you do is help us save the world, because I think that's where we're going. We gotta try to turn things around.
We have to do that. It's important.
Beautiful. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Okay,
bye.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.